You are listening to the Police Resilience Podcast, a podcast from the International Association of Chiefs of Police and the Department of Psychiatry at Columbia University, where you'll hear from law enforcement leaders sharing wisdom, insight, and perspective. This episode is funded by the U.S. Department of Justice's Bureau of Justice Assistance through the Valor Officer Safety and Wellness Initiative. The department's full disclaimer notice is available at the end of this podcast and in the episode show notes. The views, information, or opinions expressed during this presentation are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of the IACP, Columbia University, or BJA.
All right. Hello, everyone. This is the Police Resilience Podcast, created specifically for law enforcement across the country, across the world. This isn't about fluffy conversations. It's about understanding the science behind real resilience and how, as police, we need to make sure we're taking care of ourselves. That's not selfish. It's smart. This podcast is a partnership between the IACP and the Psychiatry Department at Columbia University Medical Center. We're leaders in policing and we're leaders in mental health and research and services. Let's be clear about one thing. You already have resilience in you. Now let's work on enhancing it. Today's episode, as I say, I think in everyone and going forward, I don't believe in jinxes here, is we got two great guests. We're talking about a truly very important topic. The previous episode, we talked about meaning and purpose generally, broadly. Today, we're going to take that a step further and we're going to talk about resilience in retirement. And not just meaning and purpose, but how each of these resilience practices can be a gateway to other resilience and well-being practices, and ideally, among many other things, preventing suicide. But it's not just about preventing suicide. It's about living and thriving in our lives. And you think about it, with this episode, I'm not going to go too heavy or too deep into the research because I want to get into the conversations. But I'm sure that there's ample evidence out there that we know this job takes a toll on us. And we can't wait until retirement to look after our mental and physical health, where there's plenty of research that shows we die at a much younger age than the general public. And overall, it's just really cruel in an awful way to go about. But I guess before I jump to our two guests, let me just say my story. And I'll come back to it. And I know our other two guests will share their stories as well. I retired when this was recorded. I retired just over a year ago from the New York City Police Department. So before I was this doctor research scientist at Columbia, I was a detective in the NYPD, former hostage negotiator, patrol officer, PIO, first ever mental health and wellness coordinator. And let me be clear with why did I retire? I loved what I was doing. In all my roles, I loved what I was doing. But here's the thing, especially in the last years of doing mental health and wellness for the workforce, I took a great big dose of humility. I took a big dose of the humility pill. And what do I mean by that? I'm not that important. And let me be clear, I'm not minimizing myself or anybody else. But I realized if I help design and put together programs like the psychological autopsy or the peer support and other things like that, if they were developed the way that I intended, they should last long after I leave and retire. I also wanted to make sure I wasn't going to be one of those guys that got burnt out and cynical and walked out of 1PP, NYPD headquarters, giving everyone the middle finger and burning every bridge that I saw and doing a scorched earth. No. Fortunately, I walked out smiling, high-fiving people. Not really too many hugs. I'm not the type of guy that likes giving hugs, especially to strangers. But here's my thing. And as we think about resilience in retirement, and as we talked about in the last episode, meaning and purpose in life is critical. I am one of these people, and we're going to hear from our guests in a second, where I get to say I truly loved what I did for a living, and I got paid just the right amount. But when it comes to meaning and purpose, that was my passion. It was more than just a job. And I'm not knocking other employments out there, but it can't be my sole identity. And that's where I think we as police sometimes run into issues. When our sole identity is attached to what we do for a living, and that passion turns against us because we bring some of that negative stuff. We carry it around with us 24/7 and we bring it home. And then also our ego starts to get out of control and it becomes too much for us. And I'm all about humanizing the work that we do and the people we help, but we can't forget we're human beings as well. And finding that balance, and the last thing I will say before I introduce our guests is, and this is anecdotal, this isn't research, but from my experiences and talking with others across the country, Canada, elsewhere, I think the big issue when our sole identity becomes attached to our position, our agency, and our titles is the higher in rank people go. And you think about that. I know stories of chiefs, for example, that stayed around so long, longer, like they could have retired because, well, you know, they had time on the books. They stayed until their very last day until forced retirement because they aged out, and they left years, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years on the books that they just threw away. Why? Because they were having such a hard time leaving. And you think about how sad that is. And resilience is absolutely on the agency, especially when we talk about segueing into retirement, but we can't forget it's also on the individual as well. And from that note, let me introduce very briefly, I'm going to introduce our two awesome panelists, guests today, and I'm going to ask them just to share a bit more. The first, and I'll introduce you gentlemen both real quick, and then David, I'll ask you to just give us a bit more about who you were and who you are today. You like how I did that, I think. So Chief David McGill, he's retired from police. He's got an incredible career. Our other guest is Tom Woolworth. He's a retired supervisory special agent. And honestly, that's all I'm doing as far as today's intros, because I want to hear your story, and the power of these narratives are incredible. So Chief McGill, who are you and who were you?
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Great work that you're doing. David McGill. Wow, 30-something years, 32 years in law enforcement, and in a blink of an eye, it was over. And I did not quite prepare for what was coming my way. I was blessed in working some great organizations like LAPD. No offense to New York, but it is the first.
I'm taking, thank you.
And a couple other departments after my LAPD career. I did retire as a chief. And it came, like I said, suddenly, and I was left with, wow, I got to reinvent myself. I've got to do something. And luckily for me, throughout my career, I never really depended on my career as being my sole identity. I had so many things that I loved to do, but I really had to have a face-to-face conversation with myself and say, wow, what makes you happy? What are you going to do now? And I latched on to a couple of things. Water is real important to me. The ocean is important to me. Ended up getting my captain's license and doing some, moving to Hawaii and doing some really great stuff. But that whole identity thing, I get it. I didn't think I was going to be one of those guys. I am. It wasn't the rank. It was the leadership. I just loved my career. I loved leading people. And to have that evaporate, it was humbling, as you mentioned. It was just, wow, I had to come to grips with, I'm not that guy anymore. I got to go do something else. And what I relied on, and I think is real helpful for your viewers, is do really what you love to do. We did that in law enforcement. When that's gone, go to plan B. What else? Because everybody's got passions. And I latched on to a couple of things, and I'm so thankful I did. So being able to adapt, being able to change directions, to pivot at a moment's notice, with one other thing that I'll mention, and I'm sure it'll come up, be financially ready. And I don't think I was, because it happened kind of suddenly. Going to seminars, listening to podcasts, really preparing for that. You know, I'm pretty spontaneous, and that kind of bit me in the end. I'm living very fine. I'm comfortable. But being financially able to look around and take your time in picking those next careers, it would be really helpful.
Yeah, and I'm going to come back to you more with all of that. One thing I want to point out, you downgraded. You went from chief of police to captain of boats. Is that correct?
Yeah, but you're still in charge, baby. You're still
good,
leading.
Good point. Point well taken. Thank you. And one of the things before we jump into our other guests, too, is you threw out like buzzwords, but they're more than buzzwords because we have to truly live them when we transition to retirement. And I like you use the word pivot and adapt. So there's still meaning and purpose to your life. And you were a leader of police for over 30 years, but that's where it was on you to figure out how do you still have it in a different way. The other thing, which we absolutely are going to have to come back to, and is that idea of just because you want to retire, you got to make sure you're financially ready to retire. If you can, just real quick on the financial part, it sounds like, and I know we've spoken before, and you sort of jumped into retirement. Were you financially able to retire? Let me take a step back. Answer this question first. Did you know if you were financially able to retire?
I had no idea. I knew I was going to collect a pension or two. I have a small one at the other agency I work, which, come on, you know, we all live outside our norms. We all kind of push that envelope. In retired, you do too. But the problem is you have nowhere to go if you overextend. So you really got to be careful about that. I was not prepared. I was prepared thinking, yeah, we could do this. But then we get into this lifestyle and this, you know, I have a significant other. I love her to death, but dang, you know, we got to make some couple extra bucks. So I wish I would have gone to a few more seminars. I wish I really would have sat down. I'm not a financial guy, and I've proven that many times over, but I live fine. I live comfortably. I get anxiety because I want more, you know, I want that extra little bit, but we don't have to. So just be careful about that piece.
And that's truly it, is that it's living within our means, which is something I know you advocate and I do when I do my resilience work with agencies. And yet again, you have to adapt and pivot to living within your means when you move on to that next stage in your life. And I think I forget what you called it, but I know like even like with Chuck Wexler at Perf, they call it that chapter two. And whatever terminology anybody wants to do, it's the last thing I'll say is I think what you pointed out, and to connect that dot for our audience here, is as smart as you think you are, sorry, not sorry, listeners, you don't know everything. And when it comes to finances, I know some financial gurus that are also police. Most of us are not. Reach out to a financial person. Make sure that you're reaching out and getting that advice and guidance from them. I'm going to come back to you, David, in a second, but let's bring in our next guest who's been incredibly patient. Tom Woolworth is a retired supervisory special agent, and he worked with the Bureau of Indian Affairs at the Office of Justice Services, and I believe it was over more than 25 years. Tom, tell us, if you don't mind, a bit about your career and then how you were able to transition to retirement and what is it that you're doing now?
Well, Jeff, thank you very much. Again, I appreciate it. Appreciate the invitation to come in and to visit and give a little bit of my story, especially as it relates to Indian Country law enforcement and to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. My career actually in law enforcement began as a student intern with the U.S. Marshals Service out of Western Oklahoma. They gave me the opportunity to see a federal side of law enforcement. And then I transitioned from them and then went on to work as a tribal officer with Sac and Fox Nation out of Stroud, Oklahoma. Worked as a uniformed police officer. And of course, this was back in the mid or early 80s. So, of course, Indian Country law enforcement was beginning to get its feet securely grounded into the law enforcement realm. Sac and Fox, at the time, I was probably one of two officers covering dependent Indian communities in the state of Oklahoma from Shawnee, Oklahoma, all the way to Stroud, and then even into Holdenville and other communities. In 1988, I had the opportunity. I applied and was accepted as a uniformed police officer with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. My career actually started in with them, actually in Red Lake, Minnesota, working amongst the Red Lake Chippewas. Excellent community, excellent law enforcement. Unfortunately, they wanted to retrocede the program from BIA and start their own tribal program. So it gave me the opportunity to go to Wind River Agency in Wyoming to work out of BIA Wind River, covering one of the largest reservations in the state of Wyoming, from all the way from Lander up to Riverton, and then even into Crowheart and to other communities. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. I worked and actually was employed for 25 years with BIA. My career also expanded to going to the academy to serve as first of all, as a teaching instructor, police officer instructor, then was full-time as a law enforcement instructor through the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and then promoted to criminal investigator, and then had the opportunity to go work for several years with our internal affairs group and our inspections group, and then came back to the academy as the deputy chief and then chief of training And then I ended my career in the Pacific Northwest as the supervisory special agent for District 8 in BIA, which was essentially Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska, and serving essentially about 185 tribes that are contained in those four states. When I retired, and I will tell you up front that I was very, very fortunate in my career that at year 10, year 15, and even in year 20, I had the opportunity to sit down with retirement specialist and begin that process of being able to ensure that through my 60 covered as a law enforcement officer through the federal government and our classifications, as well as ensuring that I also was financially ready and prepared to retire when I did. And I was mandatorily retired at 57, which means I spent 25 years, 7 months, 5 days, 4 hours, and about 18 minutes. Well, 19 minutes.
Very specific. Nice, Tom.
We're not going to count that last minute, but I mean, as with David, I enjoyed my job. And I mean, my wife will certainly tell you that there are times that I've often said that I would do that for no pay.
You know, so, Tom, so just to jump in for a second, because as you've done 25 plus years, right? And David, you did over 30, 32 plus years. I did 20 plus years in my career. I know there's listeners that aren't just chiefs. We have younger listeners that are new into their career. And this is important to point out. If there's one thing I learned, and this is a podcast on resilience, and I'm not mincing words or minimizing or sugarcoating things. If you don't like what you're doing for a living, and if you're miserable, find another job. And I'm not, I know it's not easy. And I know people have mortgages and payments and family commitments. I know you can't just do it at the snap of a finger. But if there's one thing I learned from my career, and then especially just the blip of COVID, life is very, very precious. Start living your life. Because you heard what Tom just said. It was a wonderful experience for him. You heard David say the same thing. And Tom, a quick question for you, if you don't mind, with one of the things you said. You said you met multiple times with financial advisors before your retirement.
Yes.
Was that your own initiative? Did the agency help you, a combination? Can you shed a little light on that?
And I will tell you that and one of the reasons why that I'm extremely fortunate is the fact that the federal government had set up a retirement seminars at various stages so that you were offered that opportunity to go and sit down with financial advisors. You were also given the opportunity to also sit down with retirement specialists who would begin to kind of work with you on foreseeing these are some of the things that you're going to encounter when you retire.
Yeah.
You know, suddenly, hey, that, you know, federal government paycheck, you know, is not going to appear after your retirement. It's now going to be federal annuity, first supplement, and then whatever you contributed to your TSP, which is always the three legs of our retirement. And I was very fortunate in that the advisors sat down with me and said, okay, if you're going to want to be financially successful, here is a plan. And they laid out the plan.
And I like how you pointed out, Tom, also, it's that idea of they made it available for you to meet with them in resilience. Yet again, it's agencies can provide it. And I always said, for us old folks and listeners, I've had younger cops say they have no idea this metaphor, but it's from the movie Field of Dreams for those that know it. Just because it's the opposite, just because we build it doesn't mean they'll come. And in that case, they provided the opportunity for you to get the financial meeting. You still have to take the initiative and do it. Yeah. And that's where there's the real resilience. It's on us still as individuals.
Well, I'll add one thing, Jeff. It's also, you know, I teach leadership and I've had many, many mentors and peer leaders. It's up to us as leaders to grab a hold of people, whether they're line level or all the way up to chief, put your arm around them. Among other things that you teach about all survival, about doing the job and doing all those things, those are all great. But every once in a while, we got to step up and say, hey, look, come over here. Let's go sign up for deferred comp. Let's go talk to somebody right now. We need to do that. We need to, because there's people like me out there that are gun shy for whatever reason. It's just, I don't want to deal with it. We got to step up and help the next generation be prepared for having a good career, but even a better after career.
And this is the thing, Dave. And by the way, I want to just add one thing to that. First of all, only you, and when I say you, you personally, but everyone, include only you know when is the right time to retire. Mm-hmm. They're called advisors in the financial sense, but we have mentors, we have friends, family that will give us advice and insight. That's your choice to make. And only you know when it's the right time. There's never going to be a perfect time either. At least that was my situation. I'm going to throw another question to both of you. I'll come to you first, Tom, and then over to you, Dave.
Sure.
The importance of, especially in retirement, but maybe working on it, how vital it is to have hobbies and stuff to do for fun. Because, and this is what I say to the audience, if you're not finding the importance of this, maybe think of the opposite. If you have no hobbies and do things for fun, when you actually do retire, what the heck are you going to do all day? So, Tom, wait, how did you pick up new hobbies? Did you do more of current hobbies? How did that work for you?
Well, and I did, Jeff. I will tell you that, of course, I had been playing golf since I was a younger man. And then, of course, as job requirements kind of elevated, unfortunately, I did not play a lot. But when I did retire, I went back to the same three guys that I've been playing golf with for a number of years, and we started right back up, playing 2 days a week, 3 days a week, sometimes even 4 days a week. The other things that I began to start taking an interest in was the fact that I also have two grown stepdaughters who are special needs, and they are very, very active in the Special Olympics movement.
Oh, that's fantastic.
In New Mexico. And so automatically, for me, it was becoming a unified partner in a number of sports, but also getting them to practice, getting them to participate, also working with the organization as part of the fundraisers and other things. And, you know, finally, one of the plans that I had when I did retire from federal service was to also want to go back as an adjunct instructor or a retired annuitant instructor with the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. Unfortunately, as I was starting that process, I began to start having some health issues. And those health issues became prostate cancer. And the prostate cancer we aggressively treated it. It is now in remission. And so I am one of those stronger advocates that talk to middle-aged officers about preparing to make sure that they get their PSA test every 6 months to see where they're at on their prostate, to have their prostates examined. And I know that's kind of a taboo, but it's kind of like, hey, you know, the one I could say is that my primary physician did a digital exam, and then my PSA came back and it was high. I was 6 on the Gleason scale and was presented options as treatment. And that's essentially what saved my life and allowed me to continue in my activities to support not only my family, my girls with Special Olympics. That aggressiveness, I think, is what kept me going. And I am extremely grateful to
all of them,
my help team, for allowing me to still be here and worked aggressively on my behalf.
Yeah, and that's a powerful message. And I'm glad you're still here sharing this with us, Tom. Dave, before I throw it to you, what Tom shared made me think of a research study I just read earlier this week. In our older age, which I'll speak for all of us, we're not as young as we used to be. It's really cool. I think research is cool, and I'm sharing it with you guys. The study showed that people have healthier lives as they're older and find meaning and purpose with volunteer work. And it's kind of what I thought of when Tom shared that. Here's my thing. And as I throw it to you, Dave, for our audience, as the words you mentioned earlier, that idea of pivoting and adapting, find that meaning and purpose. As you said, you love being a leader. You could become a teacher. They actually pay you. That's not volunteer work. But there's other great organizations and stuff that I do with hostage negotiators. I tell them, go become a volunteer crisis counselor, like Crisis Text Line or other great groups, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. There's a lot of groups out there that need our expertise, and they're looking for us. But hobbies, David, before, during, now, after.
When I opened, I told you or I talked about developing things while you're working. have those, develop those hobbies, those interests, and work on that stuff as you're working. Don't be so one-dimensional that all you're doing day in and day out, you're meeting, eating, drinking with friends in the business. That's all you're thinking about is cop, 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 cop. Have some outside interest. And the better ones, you know, Tom talked about golf. Well, golf is cool, but you got to pay for golf, man. Have an interest that'll pay you. And you mentioned that too, Jeff. You know, I got into, you know, I had the boating experience, and the best boat to own is somebody else's that you're driving, and they pay you. And it's just amazing. So have that outside interest. And so I see guys that retire, and some of it, you know, it's good for them. They want to be in security. They want to stand a post, and man, that ain't for me. And it's not for everybody. So having those outside interest gives you that flexibility, gives you those options to say, what else can I do? And some of that stuff's going to pay. Here's another thing real quick. This double-edged sword, that it's not on or off. You know, we lose our identity. We get sad. We're not in the game because we love it so much. But you can still be in the game by participating, by volunteering, by teaching. I got into some great organizations, working with some great organizations. I teach law enforcement across the country. I'm the IACP, you know, chair of the retired guys. You know, I don't do much, but my hand is in the game. I check in the pulse of the passion of the profession that I love. That keeps me running. And on the side, then I can do my other stuff. I'm still attached. I'm not totally disengaged. And that helps my mind get down to reality that, you know, you're not doing what you're doing anymore, but you can still participate. You can still provide value to the organizations.
And that's the thing. And I hope people are doing what I was doing while both of you were talking, and what you said there, Dave. It made me think of, like, in the world of psychology, your thoughts impact your feelings impact your behaviors, and then it becomes cyclic in all directions. And as you said that, yeah, retirement is a little bit scary. And I had a good game plan set up for the most part, but it was still scary a little bit, which I think is normal to acknowledge that. But here's the thing, what I like how you said, how do we frame it? In retirement, it allows you to dot, dot, dot. And you think about the narrative that you've developed, that Tom, you've developed as well, that I'm trying to. So I also, though, just as a sidebar, I don't play golf other than mini golf, and I'm only so good at it. I like the ocean, but not so much on boats. I like to be the ocean where I'm close enough to swim back onto shore. But I kind of picked up pickleball. Is that not the quintessential retirement sport to be playing?
That's it.
The NYPD has a pickleball team, and they allow retirees on their team. I know time is flying away from us. I want to throw it back to you guys to see if you have any key tips that you want to share with everybody. I might be able to squeeze in a question or two more. But with those tips that you really want to emphasize to our listeners. And before we do that, another thing where we talk about the right time, I like finding these motivational quotes or memes. And here's one that I found a couple of years ago before I ever even thought of retirement. But it reminds me, even now in retirement and the four or five jobs that I seemingly picked up, nobody ever said on their deathbed they wish they worked more hours. The day needs to end sometimes. And again, it's what are our priorities? And this is the key. Priorities need to change. That's healthy. Whatever your priorities were 10, 15, 20 years ago, good. That got you to where you are today. But if you're really grown and maturing, they should change a little bit. So I'll come to you, Tom, first, and I'll come to you, Dave. What are some key things that you really, really want the audience members to know in terms of retirement that maybe you learned in a good way or even bad way or a combo?
Well, and Jeff, I could tell you that number one, if I can impart any wisdom or anything that may stick with, especially officers as they're beginning, even into the to the middle of their career and even into the twilight of their career, is number one is to be prepared, is to ensure that you have everything situated, your beneficiaries, all of the documentation that you would expect. If something was to happen to you and if she was to lay it out, I would hope that, you know, the beneficiary documents would show that she would be entitled to a number of not only financial and also personal items, but also that she would be well taken care of, especially in her years after my retirement. And that's the one thing I impart. The other thing I'm really strong with a lot of officers is to ensure that you have or beginning to have a will put together of your last wishes. And the reason I say that is that, I mean, we've all gone to law enforcement funerals, and we all have stood and mourned the passing of a brother or sister in blue. But at the same time, then you look 6 months later, a year later, and you go to even see the surviving spouse, the children, and something has occurred that there was no documentation, or there was no beneficiary, or there was no will. Now everything is tied up in probate.
Yeah, that's really important.
And that would be the wisdom that I would make. The other thing, too, is to, again, have a game plan. I mean, you know, play golf every day. Okay. You know, if you're financially able to do that, great. If not, you know, pursue your hobbies, look for other new interests. And I think, you know, the one thing I'll tell you too, culturally, because I'm an enrolled member of the Shawnee Arapaho Tribes of Oklahoma, you know, my retirement gave me the opportunity to begin to participate a little more with tribal activities, to visit with our tribal members, and to also attend a lot of our tribal meetings, as well as our tribal ceremonies. And so that was something that was, even though that I work in Indian communities, you know, it's always different, and especially from my tribe. So I've had that opportunity. And so I would say, man, you know, pursue it, pursue new interest, be involved. In fact, one of the things that my wife and I discussed as we retired was doing more traveling, and we're about to do that here in the next 24 hours.
So, yeah, which I'm glad you made time for the important things also in this podcast, because I know you're in the midst of traveling. So
yes,
those are really, really important tips. And I think they're practical, where many of our listeners, regardless of where they're at, they can make some immediate actions on them. So I appreciate that. Dave, how about yourself?
Well, we've covered a lot of ground here. And I think in order to, how many people have heard this from retired friends that they know? I'm busier now than I've ever been in my life. I mean, we all are. And how did that happen? It happened because you're fluid, you can adapt, but you got to, planning to me is a scary connotation. Planning to me caused me not to plan, because it requires me to do stuff. If you get in your mind that you got to have a good foundation, I like foundations. I like, okay, from here, because plans change. I can do this, I can do that, but as long as I have a foundation from which I can bounce from things to things, if you got to go back to school to get a certificate, go do something, do you have that foundation that allows you to do that? And it does require some planning. I'm not very good at it. But here's one of the things we never talked about: relationships. Most, if not all, the things that I'm doing today, all the wonderful things that I'm involved with, came about because of the relationships that I had and cultured throughout my career. Don't burn bridges. Be nice. You know, culture those relationships, because you're going to get a call, or you're going to reach out to people and say, hey, I'm looking for work, I'm doing this. And your contacts and your friends and associates will hook you up. And because there's a good need out there for the next generation of older guys like us and ladies to teach others our wisdom and all that. So those are the things that I love being spontaneous. I love being fluid, but my foundation allows me that capability. And I nurture my relationships, because every once in a while I get a call and say, hey, what do you think about this? Are you interested in doing this? And I say, yeah, sure.
Yeah. And you give off those vibes, both of you, where it sounds like, first of all, it just seems that you were just always good men, good gentlemen, and you had different titles and you rose up the ranks. And that's exactly what we need in policing, people like yourself. But then when you retire, we got to keep filling those ranks with similar, just good-hearted people. And with the stuff both of you shared, the way I look at it is, again, that line, now in retirement, you get to do dot, dot, dot. And we're the authors of our stories. We write that narrative. And here's the other thing I was thinking as you were saying, and for myself as well, I am busier than I used to be, but also in really good ways, because I control 99% of my schedule. Yes. I pick and choose who I want to work with. My reputation that I work so hard on is what's helping me get work. But then I pick and choose what I want to do. And importantly, spending time with family, because I don't want to say I sacrificed a lot. It was part of the job. I missed a lot. They missed a lot of me. And this is my take on this. We, and for our listeners, you gave so much during your career. Now it's time to get. And that's not selfish. It's smart. You've earned it. Make sure you're enjoying it. And again, I can't say it enough. Make sure you're looking after your mental and physical health, because that's what real resilience is. And stop waiting for others. And the other one last thing I want to say, because we got to wrap this up, is we're all different. We all have different roadways in life. Don't knock other people for whatever they're choosing to do in retirement. And whatever it is, that's for them. Of course, give people help, maybe advice or guidance. But if that's what he wants to do, if that's what she wants to do, God bless them. They earned it. And just because maybe they did get another job, you don't know what they're going through anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's that thing of, let's not be jerks to each other. We shouldn't be jerks to each other at work when we're in policing. And then let's carry that over into retirement. That's the baggage you got to carry with you. 1.5 sentences left, gentlemen, before I do officially wrap this up. I don't know what 1.5 sentences are, but everybody pay attention, because Tom's giving us one and then Dave.
All right. The 1.5 sentences is, always look forward, be prepared, and be grateful for everything that comes your way.
Excellent. Thank you, Tom. And Dave?
Recognize that you are blessed. You're blessed to have had a great career. You're blessed to be in a position where you are now. It is a little bit intimidating. It is a little bit scary out there because you haven't done it before. But know from all of us that are in it and are working on it, it is a blast. It is a lot of fun. You control, as Jeff said, you control your life from this point forward. And so take that control and have fun. Do what you want to do, man. Life is going by so fast. You can't stop it. Have fun. Earn, you know, everything that you do. You have earned it, I should say. Now enjoy it. Enjoy it. Do what you want to do. Don't be scared. It will be scary, but don't be scared. It's all fun.
Yeah. And gentlemen, I can't thank you both enough. And one of the reasons I do this podcast is always learning, being inspired. And I mean it because I'm saying it. Otherwise, I wouldn't say it. So I appreciate both of you taking the time to be here. And for our audience, the last thing I'll just say is you shape your life story. It helps you live in the moment, but it builds the future. What kind of future? The one that you want. You're the author. You construct that. Plan for today. Plan for the future. Work on today. Work on the future today as well. And as I always try and leave a similar message with all of our listeners, thank you. I know you don't have to listen to this, but you did. I hope you're finding value in it. I do personally. And then with our guests taking the time to be with us, do something today. Look after your mental health, after your physical health. It starts with us, but it doesn't end with us. So after you look in on yourself, check in with a brother or sister in blue. There's somebody out there waiting to hear from you. You be that person to check in on this, because we're all in this together. Onward. Thank you very much, everybody. Take care.
This project was supported in whole or in part by cooperative agreement number 2017-VI-BX-K001, awarded by the U.S. Department of Justice Office of Justice Programs. And as always, the opinions contained herein are those of the speakers and do not represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice or the IACP. References to specific individuals, agencies, companies, products, or services should not be considered an endorsement by the speakers. Rather, the references are illustrations to supplement discussion of the issues. Thanks for listening to today's episode. You can visit learn.theiacp.org/podcast to view show notes from today's episode and to find additional ways you can learn from leaders in the field.